At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Test 1, 2. Test 1, 2. Welcome to the Film Room Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Proctor. And in this show, I'm going to break down the game of college football, try to give you a quick listen scouting report to give you everything you'll need to know each week as the Utes and Cougs buckle up their chin straps. Listen in and level up. The Film Room is your weekly game plan. All right, everybody, welcome to week two of the college football season. This is the Film Room Podcast. Like I said before, this is going to be the film review for BYU versus Portland State, as well as a scouting report for BYU heading to town against Stanford in Palo Alto for this coming Saturday. Diving in real quick, last week BYU took care of business, okay? I was maybe I didn't have enough faith last week against BYU. I don't think it was without reason. I think BYU in the past has, it's safe to say they've underperformed against teams that they should destroy. You know, teams like Portland State, teams like Sam Houston. They've had a couple of bad scheduling years, what with their independence and starting the Big 12, and then they had kind of an awkward COVID year in 2020 where they scheduled a bunch of, you know, mid-level or lower-level teams, FCS teams, or kind of unheard-of Conference USA teams, things like that. So I don't think it was without reason. I have a history for thinking that BYU maybe not would not have performed as well as we hoped they would. But if this first game is any indication, if we can take it, you know, at face value, BYU picking up right where they left off last year. You know, typically when we see, and I'm not saying that BYU is at this level because I don't think they are, but just drawing some comparisons, when you see teams like Alabama or Georgia, and everyone's doing it this week and last week, they are all playing FCS or lower level FBF teams, and they're all winning by 40, 50, 60, 70 points, right? We've seen this before where, like, you know, yeah, Alabama will play Tarleton State or Georgia will play, you know, whatever team comes out of the Southeast that is an FCS school. And yeah, they'll put up 75 points, right, on these teams. And so really encouraging to see BYU come out and Coach Satake, you know, putting aside his Christ-like, you know, love of people and, you know, the need for brotherhood. And puts down a whopping 69 points on the Vikings and allows none. So kind of a rough state for Portland State. They have allowed, I think, 110 points against them this year so far. So kind of a rough year so far for Portland State. But I think the number one story, what everyone was hoping to see, that I think we wish we would have seen more of it, was true freshman starting quarterback number 47, Bear Bachmeier. He was 7 for 11. For 97 yards passing, so it's, you know, it's about 9 yards per attempt. He had 3 touchdowns through the air, no interceptions, which is awesome. But I think just his limited number of repetitions, limited number of yards gained, QBR of 66.4 for the week, excuse me. We saw a little bit of also McKay Hillstead and Trayson Bourget at the quarterback spot. I liked both of them. I thought they both looked good. You know, it's comforting to know that you've got two guys, you know, behind you on the bench that can step up and perform when if they need you to. LJ Martin, I think, actually should be the number one story of the BYU offense last week. 8 carries for 131 yards. A 49-yard longest rush. I wish they would start a new category of number of players drugging. During a run, he was just carrying people left and right. Number 5, Cody Hagan as well. 2 rushes for 57 yards. I mean, gosh, they got everybody involved. BYU last week had 468 yards rushing against Portland State, which, again, you'll say, you know, hey, FCS defense, but still, almost 500 yards on the ground. That's, I mean, it's not like there's nobody standing in front of you. Like, there are still human beings in front of you trying to pull you down, trying to stop you. And, you know, these FCS kids, they might be less talented, but not any smaller. They might be a little slower, but they're not any smaller, right? You still have to power through these kids. So very, very impressive rushing rushing game from BYU. You know, like I said, 400 and almost 70 yards on top of 138 yards of passing and receiving from the Y. So, you know, that's what, 500 and, well, 610 or something yards. More than 600 yards of offensive production. Very awesome. Exactly what we were hoping for. You saw guys like, you know, veterans like LJ Martin come back. Guys like Parker Kingston. Guys from Utah, number 20, Carson Ryan, coming back. Lots of awesome production. Kind of, I guess, one of the unfortunate spots for BYU is lead returning receiver Chase Roberts, number 2, only had one reception for 4 yards. That's kind of disappointing, but, you know, looking to see if he can get back in the game this week against Stanford. We did have one fumble, which we lost on a punt return. Parker Kingston had a pretty good return and actually did a good job of covering the ball up, but Portland State defender just happened to get his fist right on the ball in the perfect way. So he gave up one fumble. BYU's defense, obviously, you know, 0 points allowed. You did exactly what you were hoping to do. Tons of guys that had a bunch of solo tackles, a couple sacks. You know, some guys that really started to separate themselves and kind of start to earn some of those spots. But I think, you know, I'm sure Coach Hill hasn't drawn any conclusions after playing in FCS school. I'm sure that those position battles at the defensive tackle position will still be wide open. Defensive position battles for defensive end. The linebacker spots are a little bit more secured. But defensive back, you got some position battles going on. So lots to still figure out. And I think lots we're going to see this coming week against a Stanford team, which has done really well in the past. I mean, I remember, I don't remember what year it was, but it had to have been 2015, 2016. Stanford was the number 5th ranked team in the country. And they came to Utah and Utah beat them. And it was a momentous occasion because they were good. I mean, Andrew Luck is back there now. Anyway, so I'm getting distracted. But anyway, very, very good game this week against Portland State. I'm not going to talk too much about it. Very, very positive. I don't think there's a whole lot to update as far as our expectations for BYU, that the players that we're hoping to see. I think we just want to see more of the same and mostly more of starting freshman quarterback Barrett Bachmeier. So this week, as I was kind of delving into just before, is a game against the Stanford Cardinal, a team that has definitely fallen from grace, a team that it pains your soul to see them fall so far. I mean, a team that has, again, historically not always been awesome, but historically has always held itself together, right? It's always held its own. It's been a Pac-10 and then a Pac-12 stalwart. They've been a staple team. You know, you think of greats like Andrew Luck, you think of greats like, you know, different sport, but Tiger Woods. There's a certain amount of excellence that you expect from a team like Stanford, and it's sad to say that they are very much not in that, you know, realm any longer. Recently, Andrew Luck, a retired NFL quarterback from the Indiana Colts and former starting quarterback at the Stanford Cardinal, he has stepped into, I've never seen this before, and maybe it's just they just do things differently at Stanford. He's the general manager of the football program at Stanford. That's really interesting. Interim head coach Frank Reich is holding down the fort. Andrew Luck came in a year ago, I think, and fired current head coach. There's a little bit of a weird situation going on in Stanford's football staff website. Kind of unclear as to who's doing what over there. So don't have a lot of information on offensive and defensive coordinators, but based on the film for this year, you know, a couple players to look out for on the offensive side. The first one is number 15, Ben Gulbranson. He's a quarterback, 6'3", 220-pound senior. He has played a couple years in college. Back in 2022, and I'll have to check where he's playing. He wasn't playing for Stanford at the time. I think he was a JUCO transfer. He had a pretty respectful year. He was 121 for 195, 62% pass completion percentage, which is pretty awesome. He threw for 1,455 yards, which is, again, pretty awesome. 9 touchdowns to 5 interceptions, a pretty respectable year. Then I think that's when he transferred to Stanford. Less of a year in 2023. It doesn't really matter any conversation. 2024, he played. He had 78 completions for a 61% completion percentage. Just under 1,000 yards. Not a bad year, but not really, really stellar one either. He had a pretty horrible stat line as far as touchdowns and interceptions. He had 4 each. 4 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. So, again, not really amazing. And he's not off to a good start this year either. Last week, the Stanford Cardinal went to Hawaii to play the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors. Yeah, Rainbow Warriors. He was 15 for 30 for 50%, had 109 yards passing, no touchdowns, and 1 interception. This quarterback doesn't make quick decisions. He is uncomfortable in the pocket. He often misses open receivers. He can move if he needs to, but he isn't excessively quick. He's pretty apt to feel rushed before the pressure actually gets to him. He has a tendency, like I just said, to overthrow, especially short crossing routes. He overthrew 3 or 4 crossing routes, which is probably the most dangerous route to throw. Because if you overthrow a fade, you know, whatever, it's going to go out of bounds high and outside. You overthrow a post, again, a lot of times, unless there's a high safety who's going to go up and get it, a lot of times no problem. A lot of these out routes or hitch routes, if you overthrow the ball, it might go out of bounds. But when you've got a receiver crossing over the middle of the field, you know, directly over the middle or maybe over the hash marks and numbers, if you throw that ball high, that ball is in bounds for another 10 or 15 yards. So, you know, there's likely someone behind it ready to catch it and go in the direction with it. So if I'm Jay Hill, if I'm planning a defensive scheme for this weekend, you know, they should be able, BYU should be able to use their typical pass rush on this kid and get not only a ton of sacks, but if Jay Hill is smart, he will coach his defense to get just get enough pressure on Ben Gulbranson without actually sacking him, that they force him to overthrow 2 or 3 of these drag routes, and BYU walks away with at least 1 interception, maybe 2 or 3. And we know from last year that's Coach Jay Hill's specialty is coaching these guys how to take the ball away. Okay. And I think a lot of folks last year were saying, it was luck. You know, I don't think that the team that leads college football in takeaways is lucky. I think it's coached. So, you know, lots of room, or potential for takeaways against Stanford. Moving on to the running back room. I don't know if this is true or not. Watching the game film between Hawaii and Stanford last week, the color commentator said that last year, Stanford went the entire year without a running back scoring a touchdown, which if that's true, yikes. I should have fact-checked that, but that would be incredible to me. They do have one guy to pay attention to, maybe two guys. Number 20, Micah Ford. He's 6'2", 220. He's a sophomore, so he's young, but he's pretty big. I mean, 220-pound running back, that's hefty. Last week, he had 26 carries for 113 yards, which was pretty awesome. He had a touchdown. He averaged 4.3 yards per carry. So he, you know, he's a good running back. He can move in tight spaces. He can bounce off of shoulder tackles for sure. And like most running backs, you'll hear me say this a lot. Like most running backs, he can get downhill fast if you let him. I don't think you can be a running back in the league. Or in college football, without having some downhill speed, right? Without being able to carry the ball when there's space, so he fits into that realm. Obviously, am I super worried about him? I don't know. Maybe, like I said, 113 yards rushing in one game last week. That's pretty impressive. Watching the film overall, was I terribly impressed with Stanford's running game? Not terrible. I mean, the offensive line struggles. Stanford as a whole, when you watch the film against Hawaii, I mean, not that this should matter at all, but, you know, you watch Stanford, like I mentioned before, a school that has historically, you know, been very great and plays in big settings and big games and big stadiums. Playing in Hawaii, their stadium looks like it fits maybe 20,000 people. Maybe. And they looked not just like a Mountain West team. They looked like a bad Mountain West team on this film. So, again, number 20, Michael Ford. Kid to pay attention to. Am I super, super worried about it? Not really. Other personnel to pay attention to. Their leading receiver is their tight end, number 84, Chico Holt. He's a pretty big dude. He's 6'5", 250 pounds. He's a sophomore. This is not a very impressive stat sheet. He had one reception for 36 yards, which makes him their leading receiver, which is obviously not stellar. They had another guy, number 3, CJ Williams. He's a 6'1", 205-pound senior. Like I said, he's number 3. He had 3 receptions for 30 yards, which averages 10 yards per catch. Which is pretty great. But again, you know, they didn't have anyone really on the receiving side of things that stood out, really. I think more important than personnel against the Stanford Cardinal for BYU is going to be paying attention to schemes. Generally speaking, if they're going to run the ball, they're probably going to run it from an under center formation, an ace formation, where you got quarterback under center. One running back in the backfield. They like to run a couple sweeps out of that situation. But also, a lot of their running does come out of gun or shotgun formations, right? They'll do some zone read just to, you know, base blocking and let the running back read where he's going to go. They will do some more planned blocking schemes, a power blocking scheme or a down kind of off-tackle blocking scheme, where, you know, everyone's going to, you know, hey, we're going to block down, or basically everyone's going to block towards the middle of the field, towards the center, and make sure you kind of seal off the edge. And then you'll usually have one guy from the backside loop around to kick out that last defensive end or linebacker to make a big hole, right? So they will do a little bit more of those old style, West Coast offense style blocking schemes. They'll do a dive where they just say, hey, we're going to hand this ball to the running back, and he's going to run super fast up the A-gap. Okay, so they will run the ball for sure. Like I said, number 20, Michael Ford, 113 yards last week. Nothing to shake your head at. But typically speaking, a lot of their offense is pass-based out of the shotgun. They tend to run, you know, a lot of wide stuff, either twins to each side or trips to the right or left. They will, interestingly enough, before I move on from the running game too much, when they are in short yardage situations or maybe like red zone or goal line situations, they will run a lot of traditional short yardage lineups. We're talking 8 or 9 guys on or right up near the line of scrimmage. Super tight bunches or overload formations where you've got, you know, 2 or maybe 3 tight ends on one side or the other. In these situations, it's basically Stanford is just trying to go best versus best, right? Stanford O-line versus BYU's D-line. And I'm pretty confident that in that situation, BYU will win that battle. I wouldn't be surprised if Stanford's offensive coordinator recognizes that is a lost battle and maybe tries to do some sort of misdirection or play action pass. At least that's what I would do if I was trying to best a really good BYU defensive line. So look for that type of stuff when they're in goal line or short yardage situation, you know, 3rd and 1, 4th and 1, stuff like that. Going back to the passing game, they run a lot of horizontally stretching routes or at least horizontally spaced routes. Lots of hitches. Lots of crossing routes. We've talked before about the mesh route combination where you have maybe a slot back or tight ends on either side of the formation that are both going to run drags to the opposite side of the field, hoping to cross up some linebackers or hoping to find, you know, a window between the zones. So that mesh formation is one that Stanford uses quite a lot. they also use a lot of just single drags where they have, you know, they'll have all the trips guys on one side, right? They'll run like a streak, a post, and a deep in to basically clear out a lot of the field and get all the linebackers and everybody to drop really deep to clear some space in those first 5 to 8 yards for then the backside receiver, the lone solo receiver, to run a little drag across the middle. And you can kind of tell they've pre-decided they've decided before the snap about where they're going to throw this ball. They love those crossing routes. There's another route combination that they're going to utilize called levels, which is basically some sort of combination of multiple in routes at different depths, right? So maybe one guy runs a down and in, which is a route where you run forward and then run towards the middle of the field. That's not straightforward enough for you. An in route at 5 yards, and then you have another guy that just starts just outside of him that maybe runs an in route, you know, at 10 or 12 yards. And you're basically trying to force the defense to choose, right? You're trying to create space or you're trying to differentiate the different levels between the linebackers and the safeties, trying to stretch them so that you can get, you know, an easy route throwing horizontally across the field without having to worry about other defensive players, you know, picking you off. So lots of formations like, or lots of route combinations like that, hitches, flat routes, something we call a dig, which is a really deep in route at maybe 12 or 15 yards, the mesh formation where you've got two crossing routes or levels, lots of that type of stuff. And I believe that's the case likely due to Ben Goldbranson. Is it Ben Goldbranson? Number 15. Ben Goldbranson, their quarterback, likely due to Ben Goldbranson's, I hate to say it, but lack of relative skill. It seems like he struggles to throw the ball accurately, especially or even with stuff that's right in front of him. You know, pretty short routes that are, you know, not too far down the field. So, you know, asking him to make these really incredible throws down the field, like honestly, like Nico Iamaleava is known for and failed to do last week against Utah, I think that's a tall task for Stanford to ask him to do that, which is why they're going to approach the offense this way. They will also, to that same, you know, point in trying to give Ben Goldbranson easy throws that can then get the ball in the hands of the playmakers, lots of screens, what's called a running back slip screen, where basically the running back, you know, everyone drops into regular pass protection, and then the running back really quickly turns around and you'll throw the ball to the running back with a whole bunch of blockers out in front of him, or a wide receiver screen, different types of wide receiver screens. They ran what's called a wide receiver spot screen, where the wide receiver maybe has one other wide receiver out there blocking for him, but at the snap of the ball, all of your offensive line, rather than blocking the defensive line, they just run straight out to the side to block all the other linebackers and defensive backs, and the quarterback just has to get the ball out before the defensive line can get to him. And if he can, then you've got the receiver out there wide, and he's got a whole slew of offensive linemen coming to block for him. So a wide receiver spot screen. So, again, Stanford are going to try ways to just get the ball out of Ben Goldbranson's hands. So that's basically it from an offensive standpoint. You know, I think BYU defensively, ideally, again, they would shut him out. I really expect that BYU should be able to do that. 7 points allowed, 3 to 7 points allowed, I'm like, okay, that's all right. If they allow 14 points or more, I would probably be a little upset if I were Jay Hill. From a defensive standpoint for the Stanford Cardinal, again, you know, gosh, there are probably some people we could talk about. Most notably, they've got a couple linebackers that show some promise. They've got a couple seniors. Number 35, Matt Rose. He's 6'2", 225 pounds. He's someone I think that BYU could take advantage of. He's pretty quick to come up to the line on passing plays or on play action plays. He's kind of apt to bite on those. He got run past multiple times by Hawaii's running quarterback, though he does hit fairly well when he's able to actually lay the wood. So, you know, if Bear Bachmeyer has the ability to use his feet at all, if Matt Rose is in the game, that may bode well for BYU. Number 23, Hunter Barth, 6'2", 230-pound senior. Again, he's the only veteran in this starting linebacker group. He logged 35 tackles for the Cardinal last year. Not really incredible, but, you know, it's something. And then number 51, Sam Mattingly, another guy who's 6'2", and in the 230s. He's a sophomore, so he's a little bit younger. He actually shows the most promise out of any of them. He takes good angles. He hits well. He makes his reads fairly quickly, whether it's a run read or a pass read. And I forget if we talked about this in the BYU episode last week or in the Utah episode last week, but if you're wondering what I mean by run reads or pass reads, if you're new to the game of football, or maybe you've watched the game of football for a long time and you just don't know what that means, a running read or a passing read from the offensive line is basically what does the offensive line tell you the play is going to be based on the way they get off the ball when the ball is snapped, right? If the ball is snapped and those offensive linemen get off the ball really fast, vertically or horizontally, they're very clearly going somewhere trying to move people out of the way. Typically speaking, that's going to be a run play. There is some room for that to be a run pass option, but usually it means they're trying to run the ball downhill, okay? Versus if the defensive lineman, you know, at the snap, or excuse me, the offensive lineman at the snap of the ball, they start to backpedal, go back into a pocket, then obviously that's going to be a passing play. So number 51, Sam Mattingly, he makes those reads really well. He makes them quick. He doesn't misread them. He usually goes where he's supposed to go. So if we're going to, you know, have any pushback from anyone on the defensive front, or it's the defensive backfield, it would be number 51. Yeah, again, defensive backs, I didn't see anybody that I thought was worth mentioning. Generally speaking, their defensive playbook, they follow, again, the most common forms of defense in college football. Variations of a nickel defense, which are a 4-2-5 with four defensive linemen, two linebackers, and five defensive backs, or a 3-3-5 where you drop one of the defensive linemen back into the defensive backfield as a linebacker, or you just switch out the defensive end for a linebacker, three defensive linemen, three backers, three corners, and safeties. They run a lot of cover one, which is really interesting for a team that struggles to match their opponents from an athletic standpoint. Typically, defenses that are going to run a cover one, which is a man coverage, right? Man-to-man coverage. You have to be not only really athletic and kind of superior offensively, you have to be in really good shape. You have to be well-conditioned. So the defensive coordinator must believe a lot in the strength and conditioning coach, because they run a lot of cover one, and they blitz a lot of it. They blitz out of it a lot as well. Excuse me. They do a lot with they'll blitz one linebacker, they'll blitz multiple linebackers, they'll blitz a linebacker, and then they'll twist the defensive end and defensive tackle. Meaning, you know, typically if the defensive tackle would go in either the A or the B gap, the defensive end would cover, you know, that C or D gap on the outside. They line up in the same spot, but then they twist on the snap of the ball. Defensive tackle will loop outside. Defensive end will cross the face of the offensive lineman and go towards the A or the B gap. So they'll do some fancy stuff like that every once in a while. They will run some cover two or some cover three, which are variations of a zone pass defense. But, you know, we'll see what they end up doing against BYU. I'm assuming they're going to give us something slightly different because, you know, the Hawaii offense they faced last week, a little bit of a different offense than BYU will be presenting to them this week. Not too much different in short down and distance situations. Like I mentioned earlier in this episode, Stanford did not look great in this game last week against Hawaii. They have not looked great the last couple of years. I think the biggest portion of this discussion, you know, BYU's offense versus Stanford's defense, is going to come from getting Bear Bachmeier more repetitions, giving him more chances to throw downfield, giving him more chances to sit in the pocket and learn how to, you know, go through his reads and progressions, continuing to allow BYU's stellar run offense to do its thing, and you know, just learning to take care of the football, learning to make good decisions, learning to start and continue sustained drives. I'm again looking for the BYU offense to be prolific in their production this week. I'm hoping for 35 to 49 points of production offensively. Looking honestly for something very similar to what Utah did to UCLA last week, hoping for a score of something like 49-7, 49-10 at most. It'd be great if we got like a 49-0, something like that. I really think that BYU is capable of doing that. Again, BYU started the season last week 1-0 against Portland State. I believe they will go 2-0 after this game with Stanford. We'll see how they do. That's it for the scouting report. Moving on to questions that we had last week, we had the question of who are your most favorite either fictional football players, you know, guys like Bobby Boucher from Waterboy, guys like all the guys from The Longest Yard movie with it's actually a remake, but most people know the Adam Sandler version. I actually had a funny, not even a funny one, a really cool one. Actually, this football player in this movie is not fictional at all. They're actually a historical figure. A guy by the name of Vince Papale, who, if you've seen the movie Invincible, is the story of a Philadelphia native who tried out for the Philadelphia Eagles squad, I think back in like the 70s or 80s, I think. I forget exactly when it was. I should know this because Vince Papale's story, the movie Invincible, is the movie that I watched the night before I tried to walk on to BYU, and I happened to make it onto that walk-on tryout, and so I credit that movie mostly. So John Webb, our buddy John who listens to the podcast, shout out to you for picking a cool character. We had a lot of Bobby Boucher's that were people's favorites. We had a lot of Gary Bertier and Julius Campbell's from Remember the Titans. Those were probably the most common. So thanks for everyone for answering the questions. It's always fun to chat about those things. This week's question, week two, but you know, week three of the podcast. Who is the best sports movie villain of all time? Notice we're not talking just football movies anymore. We're talking any, you know, generic sports film. Who are the best sports villains? Or maybe who's the one best sports villain? We can talk about the Russians from Miracle in the 1980 Olympics. We can talk about the Iceland U16 hockey team from the Mighty Ducks 2. Whoever it is, let me know who you think the worst sports villain is of all time. And we will get back to you next week as we preview BYU's game against the Eastern Carolina Pirates. Anyway, that wraps up this episode for this week. Hope you guys feel well prepared. Hope you know what's going on this week against the Stanford Cardinal. Go Cougs.